Good evening, Sam.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Yes, or good morning, if it's the morning where you are, dear listener.
It might be the morning. We normally post these at midday, but I have a feeling, I've got a sneaky feeling, some people don't listen to it as soon as it comes out.
Do you think? That's
mad. A couple. One or two of you. One or two of you lag behind a couple of hours, but that's fine. That's okay.
I think people actually sit and just kind of peel the feed down, refreshing it every few minutes, waiting for the link.
There was one week that we posted like a couple hours late. And by late, I mean like instead of posting early, we posted on time. And a few people tweeted and they were like, so where is it?
Where is it? By the way,
show it to me, Rachel. Show it to me, please.
Oh my god, that's so funny. Well, happy new Doctor Who Eve. There might be enough Eves actually.
New Doctor Who.
Yeah, on Disney Plus.
Dun 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 dun.
They're very much pushing Disney Doctor Who, and I hate to say, as much as I was going to call it RDD2. It is becoming Disney Doctor Who in my head a little bit.
I still think of it as RDD2, but I do know there was a huge like kind of like poll up the backs of all British Doctor Who viewers when they created that Instagram account called Disney Doctor Who.
Yes.
I know everyone when it came out was like, oh my God, this is wrong. But I love the little Disney like for the Disney Plus with the TARDIS. I love it. It's fun.
They're promoing hard though.
See, I drove past a billboard today, a nice lovely billboard of Shooty and Millie. It was just a nice little sort of terrace house behind it. But I did have a really weird moment. I was by, because you're right, the States will be getting so much promo. They're really, really pushing the US audience on this. And I think that comes from the Disney marketing money. But even here in the UK, like I was stopped at traffic lights and there was this great big billboard for Doctor Who. And I was just like, I can't remember in RTD's era, in Moffat's era, in Chibnall's era, I can't remember ever seeing this much, quote unquote, I'd like to say real life promo for it. Like we within the Doctor Who community, us Whovians, we've always been like digesting all this news and seeing every trailer and every post and every whatever. But to be driving on a road on my commute and just see a huge poster with the logo and Shooty and Millie, it's amazing.
I know what you mean. I did, to be fair, where I used to live, there was a billboard around the corner with Jodie Whittaker on it, and it did say "It's about time." And it had an illustrated face. So I couldn't pretend I hadn't seen that. But I agree with you. It does feel quite all-encompassing now. It feels mainstream, baby.
It is mainstream, honey. There are Doctor Who events going left, right, and centre. Screenings, viewings, everything. It's, Doctor Who fever.
I'd love to say we're booked and busy. Like, yeah, we've already got our calendars full for like the next 8 weeks. That's not true. If you would like to book Ooh-la-la for your birthday party, for your funeral, for your anything, our fee is a free drink, and we'll be there.
There are so many Doctor Who events going on at the moment. One that we actually really were interested in going to, but I don't think we're actually available, is on Thursday the 16th of May. We're invited by Jack from Peckham Levels to go to the Doctor Who pub quiz that he's hosting. We really want to like have a big turnout for him. He sent us a message saying that he's the artistic director of the Old Red Line Theatre, and at Peckham Levels, they're hosting their Doctor Who pub quiz on Thursday the 16th of May. If you can go, it's going to be a camp old time. Lots of Doctor Who. Drinks are flowing. Go have a laugh.
Grab a laugh, you might make some new Doctor Who friends, which I have to recommend strongly.
Oh, I saw a really, really, really cute tweet the other day from someone who'd gone to a galley cab, and they were like, you have to go to a galley cab, great fun, great friends, you might even meet the love of your life or something. And they'd like met their partner at a galley cab.
Did they?
Yeah, and they post a little selfie of them like outside the event, and I was just
that
like,
doesn't
oh, this
surprise
is so cute.
Me. That doesn't surprise me, it happens.
Doctor Who fans find each other, so.
So go to the pub quiz, you just don't
go.
Know.
To the pub quiz, go say hi to Jack and tell him that Ooh-la-la sent you.
I don't know if I showed you this at the time when I saw it. It's these Christian girls on their podcast, and they were like, when you feel like you're getting too tired to go to an event, you feel like you're getting too sick, you feel like you're just resisting going and not feeling
anymore.
Oh, no,
I saw this. I saw this.
But you've already committed. They're like, that is the devil trying to steal your joy. And they were like, and they were like, that is because God has something for you.
Yeah.
And speaking of the devil, we will be talking about him a lot today.
Speaking of the devil, the devil's in the details, honey, and he's all over this episode of Ooh-la-la.
He is. The original, you might say.
Literally, he is. I forget. Like, I mean, I love these episodes, but I forget just how good they are until I watch it again. And I'm like, they're bloody
good.
They
are phenomenal.
They are.
They're phenomenal, these two. They're really good. I think I might have said this in a previous one. In the context of us talking about underrated episodes, and we agreed that these, no, they're not underrated stories.
You were like, they're correctly rated.
They're correctly rated. Highly. And if there was one I'd like to see remastered, redone, like for like, same cast, I don't care, just, I don't know, put cinema cameras on it and new effects, it would be this story, because it's so good. Such a good story.
This is an episode that I think would make a really good Doctor Who movie, because I think a lot of people think a Doctor Who movie, and by movie I mean like a real cinematic masterpiece, not just like a long episode. People think they have to throw Nostalgia Festival and has to have Daleks and Cybermen and the Master and this and the other. I think a story like this, where the monster is like the concept of the devil, and what happens when the Doctor, which is like our good of all good, faces the evil of all evil, like, I just think this is so cinematic. I agree with you that I think, like, if it was on real cinema cameras with today's CG, it would be another thing entirely. But it's such an impressive set of episodes.
Yeah, it almost feels like tonally it would be more at home in kind of the Torchwood genre than over kind of in main Doctor Who. The next episode after this two-parter is Love and Monsters.
The next time was a tonal whiplash when, you know, I was genuinely, like, I've seen this episode a million times. I was like, deep shallow breaths at the end, like, you know, recentering myself. I knew as well that they had filmed the final scene. It was like Billy's last scene. I was right, like, oh my God. And then suddenly it was like, tastes like chicken.
It's this two-parter, then Love and Monsters, then Fear Her. Season two is wild.
It's funny how we try not to do all of the hits too quickly on Hula Last. We haven't done Army of Ghosts and Doomsday yet, but by the time we posted this episode, we'll have done this episode, the next episode, which is Love and Monsters, and the next episode, which is Fear Her. We'll have done that whole cluster of series two.
We're closing in, but we've left a lot of good ones out.
Oh, there's so many good ones. And that's just in the series.
Lots of longevity in this pod. 60 years at least.
Exactly. Well, for anyone who hasn't realised, we're talking about The Impossible Planet and The Satan Pit today. Series 2 classics, episodes 8 and 9, series 2. They originally aired on the 3rd of June 2006 and the 10th of June. The viewership were 8.97 and 5.5 million respectively. And the IMDb scores are 8.6 and 8.7 out of 10.
I was 10. How old were you? 9?
I would have been, they came out in June. Yeah, I would have been just about to turn 9. My birthday's July, so I would have just about been to turn 9.
About to turn 9.
Oh,
sweet baby.
Just a little
bubble. This was a lot for both of us. This was really heavy. This is scary now.
Literally, this is one of the ones that I was allowed to watch, but then I started it and I didn't finish it. I've told this story in the pub before and I will tell it again during this episode, but I didn't make it the whole way through on original air.
We'll get into our childhood reaction first and foremost, and then our adult reaction afterwards. But before that, we're going to go through what your reaction was to this episode.
Exactly. Meek said, the best depiction of space travel on the fringes of the unknown universe. Top tier RTD1 entry.
Ethan, friend of the pod, said, drama. Much like Sam, Toby Zed traumatized the shit out of me to the point I couldn't rewatch the episode for years or even look at pictures of Toby. Ironically, it's now one of my all-time favorites. I love the ambiguity about the beast and how that even scares the Doctor.
At Pig and Tea Break said, the best episode of all time, gripping from start to finish. One of the best endings in the show, gorgeous, no notes.
Laura said, I think this was actually the first episode of Doctor Who that genuinely scared me. I was 9. Oh, okay. Same as us.
Me too. But
yeah, you too. The whole creepy tattoos on the face and screaming man was terrifying. Still don't actually love rewatching it now, even though I know they're brilliant episodes.
I'm so glad that this episode like ripened for me, because I was worried I'd have, like, as a kid, I'd be like, I'm never going to watch this episode. And now it's my favorite too. JB said, definitely a classic, but I feel it's underrated at the same time. There you go, Alistair.
Okay. I was saying.
I'm also not a big 10 Rose fan, but they work really well here, even romantically.
At Oscar Barton 13 said, really great episode. Loved pretty much all of it. The thing with the guy being a virgin was weird, though. Felt like an odd thing to bring up. That's a good thing to bring up. I wonder how many parents had to explain what that meant to kids because of this episode. You know what? It's a little grown up. It's a little grown up.
It is. But Doctor Who's,
to be fair, I probably hadn't had the sex talk yet. My parents were late with that.
Oh, I didn't get the sex. My mum, I remember coming upstairs once. My mum just put two books on like the foot of my bed and she didn't tell me she put them there. That was it. That was the extent of my sex talk.
I think that's pretty correct though. That's a good approach. I got sort of a bad spoken explanation that I didn't fully understand.
Oh, God. How old would you have been? 10 after this.
Try not to reflect too much what I was told.
Moving swiftly on. The Bad Wolf Archives, who we adore, said, one of those episodes where the scale of it feels like a movie. Well, that's exactly what I just said, my love. Pretty much perfect in every way. Special praise to the fantastic and memorable side characters. I will get to it, but I have a whole section on that.
Beautiful. Matt at Stradi Huvier said, one of the very best. It's got such a claustrophobic atmosphere which elevates the tension in scenes like the vent chase. I love that it refuses to turn into Doctor Who. Rose, Ida, the Doctor, they all need to know what the beast is, and there is never a sciencey explanation.
That's so true. I didn't really think about how they don't reduce it to science.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Right, now last week we gave you a hell of a story. We gave you a long story, and this week we promised to go as quick as we can through it. But it's important to go back and understand the story before we start talking about it. And if you haven't seen the episode, we always advise, go back, stick it on iPlayer, well worth a watch.
Well worth a watch. But if you haven't watched it, if you haven't got iPlayer, please sit back, relax, pick up your Bible and listen to this recap of the episode.
The TARDIS materializes on a planet that shouldn't exist, a world orbiting the edge of a black hole. The Doctor and Rose find themselves on a human colony called Sanctuary Base 6, where a team is drilling deep into the planet to find the power source that keeps it from falling into the black hole. They also meet aliens called the Ood, an alien species enslaved by future humans.
The Doctor and Rose explore the base and meet the crew, including Zack, the captain, Ida, the scientific officer, Jefferson, head of security, trainee Scooty, and Toby, an archaeologist who discovered ancient markings deep within the planet. An earthquake causes part of the base to sink into the planet below, including the TARDIS, trapping the Doctor and Rose on the base.
As drilling reaches deeper into the planet's surface, terrifying things start to happen at the base. The Ood start talking about a beast who will rise from the pit, systems malfunction, and Scooty is killed. Just as the gang wave goodbye to Scooty's corpse, drilling to the planet's core finishes, and the Doctor decides to descend into the planet with Ida Scott. Discovering a massive cavern with an ancient trapdoor, the Doctor fights the temptation to go down even further.
The Beast speaks to the crew through the Ood, and the Doctor asks which devil he is, given that there are many religions. The Beast answers that he's all of them, and that the Disciples of the Light chained him to the pit for all eternity in a time before the universe. Everyone panics, so the Doctor does a rousing speech to calm them, and with that, the lift cable snaps, trapping the Doctor and Ida in the pit.
Back above, Rose and the crew face increasing danger as the possessed Ood become more aggressive, and it becomes clear that their only hope of survival is to abandon the base. Rose protests, but the surviving team members knock her out to safely stow her on the escaping rocket.
The Doctor descends to the very bottom of the pit, where he finds an ancient prison containing a massive creature chained to the rock. To the Doctor's surprise, the Beast can't speak, deducing that this is only his physical form. The mind, the idea of the devil, has left. The Doctor also realizes that the planet is his perfect prison. If the Beast has ever freed itself, the gravity field would collapse and the planet would fall into the black hole.
Inside the rocket leaving the planet, the Beast speaks through Toby once more, and Rose tells him to go to hell. She ejects him from the ship and into the black hole. Their triumph is short-lived, with the gang knowing that they've defeated the Beast, but are themselves now doomed to fall into the black hole.
But in a final twist, the Doctor has found the TARDIS and uses it to tow them to safety, leaving behind the mystery of the Beast and the impossible planet. As the Doctor and Rose say their goodbyes, Rose tells the Doctor what the Beast warned her, that she will die in battle so very soon.
Wow, this is a heavy episode.
Corker.
Well, two-parter, heavy two-parter and a corker. Okay, context then. I'm 10, you're 8, and both religious children.
Well, yes.
Good Christian children who were raised in good Christian households. You, I think, maybe even more than me, because your dad is
a vicar. The correct term? My dad's a vicar. He's a reverend. Vicar. Whatever you want.
I've heard of such a thing. Ah. Yes. And I had quite a lot of band media growing up.
That makes it sound like you liked a lot of musical bands. No.
No. There was a show on CBBC that I couldn't see with, there was like a magic book. I think the show was called Witch. I couldn't see that. That was an example. We didn't read Harry Potter. That wasn't allowed.
That's wild that you couldn't. I remember you telling me that ages ago, but that is still wild to me.
Yeah, we didn't really swear as a family. Obviously not. I mean, I was 10, but still, even now, you mustn't say, oh my God.
No, I was never. I remember if I ever said, oh my God, my dad would be like, well, surely you're not allowed to say, that's blasphemous.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh my goodness. Or oh my gosh.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
That before you could say, oh sugar.
Yes. And then when it came around to Doctor Who, series one, episode 3, mm-hmm. where the Doctor announces, we're gonna have a seance. They were like, no, we're not. TV off.
That's so funny. My parents did definitely police what Doctor Who I could watch, but only because they were like, this is gonna be too scary. So I wasn't allowed to watch the Gaelth episode right. because they thought it was like it's mainly like how to benefit you. Them. It's like, this is going to give him nightmares. He's not going to be able to fucking sleep. Mm. Like, we're not going to do this. But not because of the... I'm quite grateful, I think, that much as I did come from a religious household, I wasn't necessarily, like, policed on my media because of religion.
Yeah.
Certainly was allowed to watch this. I was allowed to watch these. And like I said, my fear for what came throughout the episode, I firmly was like, no, I shan't be watching any more of this. Thank you kindly.
Yes. And I think what was scary about this was universally scary. I don't know if it was any... Well, I say I don't know if it was any more scary to me. I'd love to go back and ask my young self for an immediate reaction. I really would. They loosened up, I will say, a lot on kind of media and general... like almost that kind
when
of,
you left home.
no, even like in my teen years, they at some point just suddenly chilled out a lot about this kind of thing. They just became a lot more relaxed suddenly, and now they just are pretty chill about all of this. Really, it's only swearing that my mum doesn't like. If there's too many swears in a in like anything, like in a comedy or anything, there's a bit of what's this? Oh, why do I have to use that language? This isn't very nice.
See, I think there's such an art to swearing. I love a good...
You can't
I love
swear in my house.
Olivia Colman, that clip before, she's like, can I say it? Can I say it? It's cunt.
Yeah, wasn't allowed. Anyway, so I was allowed to watch this one, but I think they'd also stopped watching Doctor Who with us, really.
Yeah.
So I think it probably just went under the radar, this one. I can't imagine they would have really
liked
it. You think
if they were sat with you and this had happened, they might have been like,
oh yeah, I wouldn't say they've been very happy with this one. I mean, ultimately it's a triumph of good over evil, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the context for the story, I guess, is that as a religious youth, I was raised very much in the idea, as someone who isn't religious now, with a factual worldview that there was such a thing as the devil and Satan, and that had a very real influence on my life and everyone else's life. And so this, to me, was just like, oh, it's like Charles Dickens. It's Satan, I see. We're doing...
they found him.
We're doing the Satan episode, sure. And, and that was just kind of like a real thing.
Yeah.
So I was just like...
Just thinking it was like a documentary.
I think I was hanging on to every word of like, when the Doctor does a speech in this about kind of like, oh, but which devil, which religion? I think I remember thinking to myself like, oh, the Doctor's a Christian, which was a ridiculous thing to think. Oof. But I think when...
I'm sorry.
As a little Christian boy,
I couldn't hold that in.
I wanted everyone to be on my team. Yeah. I wanted everyone else to be a Christian who'd be going to heaven with me, including my favourite characters. Very, very, just giving honesty hour there.
I mean, I get that. I definitely relate to thinking, I grew up in a very like small town, religious household. And I think I'm quite lucky that I was never, and I'm quite grateful for this now. I was like gently nudged towards religion. And again, I'm not religious now. But I think my dad realized at quite a young age for us that if we weren't interested, there's no point forcing it. So he like exposed us to it. And we had, you know, we went to church on Easter and Christmas and all Mother's Day and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't have to base my life on the religion. I kind of lived by the religious principles. So like you said, like swears, not my God and whatever. But I don't feel like it had too great of an impact on my growing up, which I'm grateful for with retrospect, I think.
Well, I was also allowed to dip on church after, like, I think it was like 14, 15.
Yeah.
They were like, right, enough. You can choose if you're coming now. And I was like, absolutely not. I want my Sunday back. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And so I didn't go. Yeah. But I still have, as you know, and I'm working on this because I'm not religious, but I have an almost a superstition around certain things still.
The Rina Sawayama concert is what strings to my mind.
The Rina Sawayama concert is the one, and she was singing This Hell, and the lyrics come up.
We're going to the station to eternal damnation.
Damnation.
And everyone, it was full of gays, full of queers, and we were like screaming, like, to eternal damnation.
Screaming, we're going to eternal damnation. And there's the next bit. We're all going straight to hell. What was that line?
I can't remember, but yeah, it was along those lines.
We were meant to repeat after Rena. And I was like, I can't.
You literally stood there dead silent. You're like, I can't say it.
I'm not taking a chance on this. It's just not one you want to say. No. You want to be careful. And I know it's ridiculous.
No, but it's deep rooted.
It's like shoes on the table, umbrellas and doors, same vein. It's like just in case.
No.
So it's anyway.
Well, it's a bit like Kathy Bates when she's in American Horror Story. There was one time where she was playing a Satan worshipper and she had to keep saying Ave Satana, and she was like, I really didn't want to say it. Like, I asked them if I couldn't say it, but they were like, you're literally playing a Satan worshipper. And she was like,
well,
I don't want to win into existence.
That's exactly what I was just thinking. I, watching it, have obviously no issues watching this episode of Doctor Who. It's Doctor Who. But if I'd been in it, if I'd been a 20-something year old playing in Doctor Who for this episode, I wonder if that would have been difficult. I don't know. Probably not, because it's not, I don't think there's, you know, overtly, like, apart from the actual devil in it, there's not like tons of satanic imagery or anything.
No, exactly. And what I like about it is that there is no definitive answer at the end. It's quite ambiguous, because it's not like, this is the Christian Lucifer, da, 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 da. Like, by the end of it,
no,
we
exactly.
don't really know who the beast is. They don't really know who it is. And I think that ambiguity is very important. I think we should dive into talking about the beast, talking about the episode.
We should dive into the actual episode. I think that would be, like, I guess my first point that I think is so great about this is I just think, like, they went there. And I think that in itself is so admirable, that they just were like, mm-hmm. what is the biggest bad we can bring in? What is the scariest threat? And I think when they've tried to even do it since with, like, oh, what's the scariest thing we can think of? Is it, like, the monster under your bed? What if it's real? What if it, you know, it's never quite...
Well, they're about to do the boogeyman.
Yeah, but you just can't quite touch, you know, like, oh, they met maybe Satan, maybe not, but just the idea of, like, an ancient core of a planet where some civilization before time was, where they chained up the devil. I'm like, that is pretty, like, metal mm-hmm. for Doctor Who. You know, like, you know, there's, like, things you would think are too far for Doctor Who to explore, but it works.
I think
so
it's
well.
So brave for them to have done it this early in the season, especially, like, again, like I said, they don't pin a particular religion or belief onto it, but the nature of, like, good versus bad, light versus dark, I really like at the end of the Impossible Planet when they go to, like, the upper level of the pit, so before they go into the actual pit, and you have all of the, they really build, like, an entire civilization that lived on that planet. They call them, like, the Bringers of Light, I think. They have all these big statues and artwork, and it shows the civilization. Then when you get to the lower levels, there's the cave paintings and showing who it was that chained the beast. And I like that there's all this lore that it's not confirmed one way or the other as to which, if any, religion it's pinned to, but I like the idea that they're saying this physical thing exists. The Doctor says to the Beast, like, I give you your existence. I acknowledge that you exist, your physical form anyway. That at least that story, you can imagine, you know, those people fled that planet once they trapped him there, and then they told stories and they told stories and they told stories, and that became lore and that became myth and that became religion.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that it all came from that.
It's very cool. And as well, like, the Doctor being like, which devil are you? He's like, I'm the one behind all of them.
The original.
And, like, what a conversation as well, like, the Doctor speaking to the devil. And I also loved the, like, extra religions they threw in. They were like, the Archifets, Orcology, Christianity, Pash, New Judaism, San Clar, Church of the Tin Vagabond.
Yeah, and the same with different words. The Beast, I think he says, in, like, the Khaled, God of War. Like,
yes.
Different words for Satan, yeah.
Yeah, love that. Just really cool. Just, like, that, you know, as well, like, in the wider Doctor Who universe, you know, religion remains a thing for all these other people, and all the way into the future. And we get that as well at the end of the Series 5 finale as well. There's, like, you know, like, a religious military order.
Series six.
The headless monks and
the headless monks, and then there's the Church of the Silence as well.
Church of the Silence, and even, I guess, the Time of Angels. They're religious, aren't they?
Oh yeah, they are. Oh,
they call each other brother and things as well, don't they?
Oh, is it pastor or?
I don't remember.
Something like that, yeah. No, you're right. Religion. I like how religion is used in Doctor Who, and I like that it's not always so literally Christianity, which is what a lot of like religion in British media is.
Yeah, it satirizes it a bit. Sort of points at the absurdity of it, right? And like the ways it manifests. But yeah, interesting. Yeah. It feels like a really grown up story. Like it feels really high stakes. It feels gritty. It feels frightening. There's a sense of claustrophobia to the whole thing. It's just like this base against this horrible vacuum of space outdoors.
Exactly. I love a base under siege story. We get it in Under the Lake Before the Flood. We get it in The Waters of Mars. We get lots of different types of like base under siege stories. I love when, like you said, with the set design, it's very real world. It's gritty. It's lived in. It's not big and shiny. It's not new. It's lived in. Like you were saying about the supporting cast, I've got a huge note here about how much I love the supporting cast, because there are a lot of people in these episodes. Like when they have the roll call at the beginning, they're like, that's Suki, that's this, that's him, that's that, that's whatever. You're like, oh my God, this is so many people. But the thing that like almost instantly within this episode, within the first one, The Impossible Planet, you care so much about these people that you have only just met. So when the first one dies, when Scooty dies, you're like heartbroken. Like I couldn't believe when Scooty died when I was watching it for the first time. And like, you really care about it. And like, it's little lines of dialogue. It's such clever dialogue. It's like when Ida sees Scooty's body and she just goes, she was 20 years old, and just like shuts the shutter on her like body floating, and little things like that. When Mr. Jefferson dies, spoiler alert, when Mr. Jefferson dies and he asks the captain to remove the oxygen because he's like, if I might have this favor, I'd like to choose my own way to go. And you're like, this is deep.
Yeah. It's hefty. I really like Scooty's character. Her death was very devastating when she sees Toby with his horrible red eyes and markings on his face outside, and there's this really haunting score that goes with it. And we did a really good impression between us just then of those strings, so, yeah. That haunting sound. We just made that really nicely. And Toby reaches to her and she looks really frightened, but she kind of puts out an arm to like reach out back to him, like she's being tempted. And then she gathers herself and she's like, what the fuck? Like, no, like, I don't want to go outside. But what's going on? And then Toby does this angry expression and starts like reaching out to like grip and break the glass. And then she's like, open door 40, open door 40. So door 40 scary.
Out of bounds. So scary. I forgot how creepy the woman's voice was. The woman who does like the comms, she's like, he is awake. He is awake. Like the woman who does the
horrible.
Oh, it's haunting. It's haunting.
So creepy.
Oh, no, it's so creepy.
There was another line, like when the Ood deliver, like, the beast shall rise from the pit and make war with God. And they say it in the most like monotone, factual way. Like, just letting you know.
The bit when the doctor goes, he's awake. And the Ood all go, and you will worship him. Like, I know.
Oh, so
do you want to talk about the Ood for a bit? Now we're on the Ood.
Yeah, let's talk about the Ood. There's a good Ood moment that I liked. I liked a lot of Rose's interactions with the Ood, because obviously she sort of recognizes that something's a bit off about having a slave race in the future. Obviously that's not right, and I'm glad they came back to the fact that that's not right.
Yeah,
and that is not a natural way for anyone to be. And an important clarification that they came back to in season 4.
Yeah.
And it's nice that Rose tries to probe, like, are you happy? Is this okay? Like, I... And tries to humanize. And there's some really funny dialogue as part of that as well.
Yeah.
She's like, the Ood is offering... the Ood's doing catering.
Yeah.
I can't remember if the Ood has, like, a penny on, or if I imagine that. Maybe an apron.
No. You're thinking about pond life. You're thinking about pond life.
Okay, never mind. It's like... That'd be quite funny. And the Ood's like, would you like sauce with that? She's like, oh, I'll have a go. Yeah, I did that job once. I was a dinner lady, not calling you a lady, although I don't know, you might be. Do you get paid though? Do they give you money? The beast and his armies shall rise from the pit to make war against God.
And then she's like, what? And it's like,
apologies. I said, I hope you enjoy your meal.
It's so, no, I had the same thing. I feel like I don't love that the solution to get rid of the Ood by the end of the episode is to kill them all. I don't like that they left them all to die. It's the Doctor acknowledged it, but I do think they definitely needed to go back to it in series 4, and I'm glad they did that. They need to come back.
They needed to come back.
But just at the very core, because obviously this is the first, I feel like New Who, surprisingly, doesn't have too many Doctor Who monsters that I consider true Doc Two monsters, like how you think of the Daleks, how you think of the Cybermen. Like, obviously, we've got the ones from classics, Daleks, Cybermen, Sontarans, Silurians. In New Who, I think of the Ood. I think of the Weeping Angels. Like, those are the two that immediately come to mind when I think of, like, real, these will last forever. Like, say Doc Two goes off air now for another 20 years. I can see them bringing the Ood back in 20 years or so. They have a great design.
Yes, such a distinctive design. Yeah, I remember, actually, I forgot this. I missed the first episode of the two-parter for whatever reason. And when I was in the playground at school, someone was telling me about what I'd missed, and they were trying to describe it to me, and I couldn't quite visualize it. And they were like, oh, they lose the TARDIS because something collapses. And I had a completely different vision of what that would look like. And then they were like, oh, also there's an alien, and it looks like it's bald, but it's got like squid tentacles coming out of its mouth. And I was like, oh,
yeah,
what does that look like? And then I saw it, and it was, again, totally different to what I thought it would be. But it's even describing it like that, like, oh, it kind of looks like...
It's got like strawberry laces coming out of its mouth.
Yeah, strawberry laces coming out of its mouth. Like, such a cool, distinctive,
really, it's like a really alien humanoid. And Silas Carson does a great, great job with the voice. He's voiced the Ood on pretty much every Doc 2 platform. In Pond Life, speaking of it, I remember they didn't have his voice as the Ood voice. And I was like, this isn't how the Ood sound. I'm pretty sure they brought him back for Flux when they had that Ood in it. I'm pretty sure he came back to do the voice.
Oh, really?
He's also recently done Big Finish. They've done a trilogy of Torchwood Big Finish, which are prequels, I believe, to this story. And each story has the Ood and one of Zack, Ida, and the other guy that I can't remember his name right now. And that's apparently really, really good. But yeah, I love the Ood. I love, like you said, I love that, like, Rose immediately, like, goes love to stand the to their affair. Love an Ood.
Love the Ood.
Love the Ood. I always associate Donna with the Ood, but I forget sometimes that Rose actually met them first. I like they immediately, though, they introduce friends of the Ood when they're like, oh, you're like that, a lot of friends of the Ood. And Rose's like, well, maybe I am.
Well, maybe I am. Yeah, maybe I am friend of the Ood. How about
that? And what of?
And what of it? Maybe I'm one of them. Yeah, it's, a great design, the Ood. It's weird how they're lovable as well as really freaky looking. They're quite sweet.
Yeah. Like, there's a real cute look to them for something that looks so horrible.
Yeah. It's, remember in the Star Beast, we get a bunch of the, like, knitted monsters that Rose Noble has made in her
Oh, I want a knitted Ood.
And she made a little knitted Ood and a little dangly mouth. And it's like, oh,
I forgot that the Ood become opera singers.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
Ooh. But in this, they are Satan worshippers.
They are Satan worshippers in this one. Oh, poor them. Yeah, that was another freaky bit. They were like, oh, that's weird. That's weird. Like, they're... their brain is operating at the wrong level, at the wrong frequency. It's like, oh, it should be working at, like, base level 3. And it's like, oh, it's at base level 60, which is, like, if they're in pain. And then it was like, oh, my God, it's at base level 100. They should be brain dead.
Brain dead.
And then they're all kind of red-eyed and stomping around, and it's really freaky. Really horrible.
This scene that always stands out in my mind, for both talking about the Ood and the Beast, is when everyone's separated and they're looking at the Ood through the cameras, and Doctor and Ida are just hearing them, and you hear the Beast voice, and it's the Beast voice, like, overlaid over the Ood, so you're hearing both of the voices. And it's another one of the reasons what makes you think about... that was not at all English. It's another one of those reasons what makes you think. It makes you think about whether or not this actually is, you know, Satan, where it knows everybody's deepest fears or anxieties. And it lists, like, the little girl still running from daddy. And Ida's just like, how did you know about my dad? How do you know? And this is another reason why this is such a fucking great episode, is because we as the audience, we don't know what happened with Ida. I feel like if another showrunner, if another writer wrote this, you'd then get a 5-minute scene of Ida being like, well, my dad wasn't there much. And I'm like, we don't need to know.
We don't need to know.
Was enough for us to care about Ida, know a bit more about her, be scared.
You can fill in the blanks for sure.
You can fill in the blanks.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. And there's like enough cues that if this is like an imitator of the devil, that it's a very good imitation. And the Beast in this is very, it's very articulate as well. Has quite a good back and forth with the Doctor as well when confronted, and it's quite a freaky match. The Doctor doesn't really manage to pick any holes in what the Beast says
Yeah, no, we even when he meets like the body of the beast, he's like, but your mind, your thoughts, you're clever. No, brilliant. Like he knows that it's like Satan, an intellectual equal. Satan, brilliant.
Well, I'd say genius, but I'm in the room.
Yeah, actually. And I love the juxtaposition of that brilliant genius voice.
Brilliant.
And then the body of the just like beast.
Yeah.
His design is great, even though it's awfully animated.
The design is really good. The animation maybe not so there, but for the time for 2006, in context of how the rest of the series looks as well, the beast CGI is really strong, I think. And the design is still good
it
and still scary.
It stands for the time.
They could use a very similar design, similar model, I think, animate it in a modern way, and it would still look fantastic. I really like it.
Do you want to see something creepy?
Go on.
I've put at the bottom of, so me and us have a little shared document that we do Hoo La La with, and at the very bottom I've got a little section on just Doc 2 merchandise that came out based on this episode, and I've just made it big. They made a Doc 2 figurine of the beast that's like a big size. It's like, I
oh
don't
my
know,
god,
like
I
10 inches tall or something. It's got, you see it?
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's got thighs, but it's, oh my god, it's got hooves. It's horrible. Like, it's actually mad. Like, I'm looking at Satan right now, and I'm like, that is wild that they put that in Doc 2.
If you scroll down, you can see all the other stuff they made. They made it really weird. They made a Barbie-sized ood.
It looks quite pale, doesn't it? It doesn't look very well, that Barbie-sized
ood. It doesn't
ood.
Look like a well ood, but it is possessed, so
it's like
it
an
might
ood
not.
That's a little undercooked.
Yeah.
Or overcooked, depending on which way we want to look at it.
Undercooked,
yeah.
Overcooked, sure oodling free.
Undercooked, overcooked. Another thing that's quite good as well is the Doctor starting to almost like buy into some of the kind of religious superstition himself. Mm-hmm. There's a moment where the Doctor wants to go deeper into this trapdoor they discover into the pit, and he's like, like he is the temptation, and he's like thinking about the Bible and like scripture, and he's like, no,
I
this
like
feels
that.
Off, we shouldn't.
He's like, for the first time I'm gonna say go back, retreat.
And truly, for the first time, there is like, when does the Doctor say retreat? When does the Doctor say nope, back,
never.
We're going back?
But I think
never.
It's because he knows he's not letting himself believe that, like, oh, this is the devil that we know it, but he's been kind of warned that he's the temptation. Like, it, I mean, they list the ood, like, they list that, they say some may call him Abaddon, some may call him Croctor, some may call him Satan or Lucifer or the King of Despair, the Deathless Prince, the Bringer of Night. And I think they say something as well about him being the temptation, or that he's like, I am the temptation. And I think he knows, like, I'm not saying that you're real, but I don't think we should be risking it, you know?
Yeah. It's like the temptation in itself, which normally is exactly what makes you want to keep going and keep exploring things. This time I need to read that as a warning. The Doctor running away is great.
Yeah. I love it when the Doctor runs away. I think that's a really interesting scene with him and Ida. And then once the rope breaks and they realize they're stuck there, he's like, well, either we sit here and we run out of oxygen, or we try and find out what's going on. And
yeah, I love that, because he's got his pass. He's like, look, I kind of have to now.
And again, me loving the supporting cast so much, there's that bit where Ida, well, when he does go down, he kind of abseils down and the rope runs out and he's still not at the bottom. And he's like, look, we're going to run out of oxygen and die, or I can free fall and hope that I survive the fall and I can find something. And Ida's like trying to pull him up and he stops her. And she just kind of pauses and she goes, I don't want to die on my own. And I'm just like, oh, it was like a gut punch. I was like, oh my God. Like, the pen was on fire writing this one.
This episode is bananas. She is a real standout character for me. She's so resourceful and curious, and there's a kindness to her as well I really like. And there's a vulnerability that she shows at those points. I love her. And it was such a delight when it was like, oh, and I've got a friend here for you. Bit oxygen starved, but she'll be all right. I was like, yeah.
She survived. I wonder if they were trying to set her up to come back, because there's a line where the Doc's like, Ida, see you again maybe, and she's like, I hope so. Like, I wonder if they thought they might be peppering,
do you think,
you know, for something.
That'd be maybe, nice, wouldn't it? They still could in a future episode. I mean, she works for Torchwood in the future, right? That's what they are, the Torchwood Archive or the Torchwood Institute or something like that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, because they work for Torchwood, but I'm like, so that, I mean, I guess that confirms that in like whatever the 21st century or whenever it is that Torchwood exists,
or in that timeline it used to. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I think something I'd like to ask for your opinion on, something I'd like to get your take on. A lot of people feel that Rose and the Doctor were annoying together in this series, which isn't something I feel especially. They're definitely like smug they're cocky, and I feel like they pay the price for it. There are times when they are overconfident and they push things too far, and that creates torture and that ultimately, you know, creates the downfall, right? And that's deliberate. And they've always had Rose be a bit of a flawed character, and there are points in like the Cyberman stories where she's a bit of a brat, but that's okay.
Yeah,
we forgive our queen. This episode though, I feel she kind of beats the annoying accusations, because she is really good on her own and does that good kind of the doctor's not here, so I'll step up and be the doctor bit that we do like so much, you and I.
We do.
And
like
she
that.
Does that very well, I think. She kind of takes control of the group in his absence.
You know what? You've led me into to green pastures here, because I was going to talk about Rose, whether or not you were leading me there. So to answer your question about if I think the Doctor and Rose are annoying, personally, no, I love them and I'll be the apologist at the end of the days. I do agree that they are deliberately written to be flawed characters, Rose especially, just as much as the Doctor. And I agree that I think she's definitely bratty. I don't like how she treats Mickey. There's a lot she does that I don't like, but I think that's quite deliberate. And I do, like you said, we do love a storyline where a companion tries to become the Doctor, and you really see it here. I love the Doctor. I love Ten and Rose, period. But I love them in these episodes. And I specifically think that this is a really great two-parter for Rose. I love that when the episode opens, she's, you know, lighthearted, carefree. She's a young woman. She's, like, laughing. And when she realizes the TARDIS is gone, she isn't distraught and panicky. She can see in the Doctor's eyes that she has to be the grown-up, because he's devastated. That's his TARDIS. That's all he's got from home. That's all he has. And she tries to say song for him, and she's like, oh, don't worry about me, like, I'm fine. And then she sort of realizes the mavity of the situation. She then is like, okay, no, I take it back, you can worry about me. But even then she's like kind of joking, and they have the conversation about like, oh, you're gonna have to get a house, you have to get a mortgage,
you're gonna live together.
But she says it in her like pre-Billy Piper tooth surgery. It's like, oh, not a mortgage. And it's all quite jovial and light. But then when she finds herself separated from the Doctor, and she's outright told, she's like, your friend is dead. Like, yeah, he's trapped down there. Whether or not he's dead in this moment, he will be dead very soon. Your friend is dead. There's nothing you can do. She is the person who rallies the troops, and she gets them together. She's like, right, okay, you know, lights, we've got to get some lights. What are we going to do with that? Okay, what was it she said? Doesn't she say something about needing, like, haven't you got a Tesco's? She says something like that, hasn't she? Okay, I found it. So Danny says to her, there's all sorts of viruses that could stop you. Trouble is, we haven't got them on board. And then Rose goes, yeah, well, that's handy, listing all the things we haven't got. We haven't got a swimming pool either, or a Tesco's. And it's her, like, saying to them, right, okay, well, it's absolutely useless listing all the things we don't have. Let's start thinking about what we do have.
Practical
and
queen.
She really, you know, I know, she really brings them together. And then even at the end, when they're like, right, okay, we can escape on this rocket, she's like, this, oh my God, I genuinely was like almost tearing up at this scene when she's like, no, I'm going to stay. And she's very like, she's not particularly sad. She's like, no, I'm going to stay. I'm going to wait for the Doctor. Like, you know, he waited for me. And Zach says to her, like, your friend is dead. And she's like, no, I can't. I wrote this one down. He says, your friend's dead. And she goes, no, I'm not going. And he's like, your friend's dead. And she goes, he's not. I'm telling you, he's not. And even if he was, how could I leave him all on his own all the way down there? And she's willing to, even if he is dead, just be with him on the planet. And whether it falls into the black hole or not, she's like, I'm not leaving him. God, and I just love, it's such a love story, Ten and Rose, and I'm such a sap for it.
It is such a love story. Yeah, I didn't really deep how dark that is. That she's like, well, that's fine, I'll just die here.
Yeah, literally.
Ooh. Oof. Yeah, she's so in love. She's so in love.
It's okay, you're in love.
I don't think the Doctor would stay there if she was dead.
I don't think so either. But this is the thing in this episode. Like, you see how she's willing to just drop everything for the Doctor. Like, he says, oh, I promised Jackie I'd always take you home. And she just goes, everyone leaves home in the end. And it's a real, like, precursor for Doomsday, where she's like, I'm just always going to be here for you.
Yeah. She's in deep. She's in deep.
It's okay. Oh, and then there's, and after, I'm just finding all these moments that I loved when she's like, he says, oh, you know, I've trapped you here. And she goes, oh, yeah, we'll trap with you. That's not bad. And he's like, really? And she's like, yes. And she's like, immediately, she says, yes.
Because I fancy you.
Because I fancy the pants off you, Docker.
I fancy the absolute knockers off you.
Have you ever heard this fan audio of someone playing Jamie McCrinnan and the second Doctor. No, it's not Jamie McCrinnan, sorry. It's Ben. Ben, you know, Ben and Polly, the first and second Doctor's companions.
Right.
And it's Ben saying to the Doctor, this was from like the 60s, like, come on, Doc, let's not beat around the bush. Fancy the pants off you are, does. And he's like, oh, Jamie, Ben, you stop talking like that. And it's like, nah, come on, Doc, don't be silly. Let's go get busy. And it's so funny.
Oh, I'm so God. Ready for the Sam Player full cast audio drama, where it's just you doing every Doctor and every companion.
And if any of the Big Finish team are listening, I'm available for work. I believe there's been a recent vacancy and I am available for hire.
What's your fee? Go on, put something out.
A shout out. Oh, you know what? I want a photo in the Big Finish car park. That's my immediate fee.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I'd do it for that too, actually. You know what's interesting about Rose in this? The Doctor is both right and wrong in putting his faith in Rose, because yes, Rose does find a way to stop the beast in ejecting Toby through the windshield, but ultimately does kill Toby, which is necessary, but not really how the Doctor works. And there's not really any pickup on that point that Rose does kill someone, and I don't know that that happens very often, that the companion kills a human being. I can't think of many instances where that happens.
No, I agree with you, and I kind of gloss over me. I guess the argument that would be made is that the beast had already killed Toby. Toby was already dead. The beast was just using his body, so she was killing the beast. But she still kills someone. I guess, is there any way... Rose kills a guy. I guess, is there any question of, like, is there any of Toby left underneath there? I think the answer's no, but the question's there.
Funny thing as well, his death, thinking about it, being sucked out the window, like, kind of clawing back, trying to grip onto something, really does mirror how she dies in Doomsday, or dies, inverted commas.
Ooh. Ooh, it does! No, you're so right.
I don't know if anyone's... mentioned that, but it's a weird foreshadow, because in that moment you're like, yeah, game, and he flies away into...
But they had the foresight not to film that in a swimming pool.
They did, but it's, you know, I'm thinking like, oh, that looks really similar. I don't know if anyone's put those two clips side by side.
No, that's one. So interesting.
Yeah. There's a few other parallels in this which are interesting, I think, actually. There's this lovely contrast that happens between, I think, all the action that's happening up on the surface, where they're all running around and going, ah, it's the end! Open the next section! I need to oxygenate! Open the door! There's no oxygen in there! Open the door! And then down on the bottom, and they're just sort of staring into the pit, and they're considering everything, and where they've come from, and what they're doing, and what might be down there, and should we, shouldn't we, and what if this is it? Having this real, like, reflective conversation down at the bottom, and like the contrast of those two things happening at once is really nice. You get this, like, it's a pause, but it's equally intense in a different way. It's not,
it gives you a moment to breathe without a moment to rest.
Yes, it's certainly not comic relief. It's not like you get down there and it's the Doctor and Ida show and everyone's having a good laugh. It's like, no, we're also contemplating death.
Yeah.
And there's also, I think, the contrast of they come in for one of the best kind of bits in the whole of series too, and they're like, oh, something wrong with the TARDIS. It's like she's got indigestion. She seems sort of queasy. Oh, if you think something's wrong, then we could always just turn around and go back. And that's pretty good. I got the words wrong, but you know what I meant. And then...
No, I know. Yeah, yeah.
Indeed, the Doctor does peer into the pit and goes, nah, we're going back, actually. And so that was kind of a nice kind of setup payoff, I think, within that too. It wasn't just a kind of... No, self-referential sure. joke. It was also like a kind of underline to that point, like, no, that this is the threat.
No, I like that. I think that this episode does a really good job of tying together different ends of the story, but also different characters' storylines. Like you were saying about how, you know, they're dealing with the pit at the bottom, and then on the upper level they're all running away loud. A really big standout for me in this story, because it is a two-parter, and Hulala, we sometimes give two-parters an episode each. Like when we did The Stolen Earth and Journey's End, we gave them an episode each because it felt like they each kind of had their own part of the story to tell. I feel like this is kind of like a movie that they cut in half, but with a corker of a cliffhanger. I have a whole section just about the cliffhanger, mainly because of the reason we were talking about, that it ties together all of these different people's situations so well, and they all kind of climax at the same time. So at the cliffhanger we have...
They all climax at the same time.
Oh, baby, it was a mess. The gravity field is going and the planet's falling into the black hole. Everyone's in danger. Mm-hmm. The Ood have just become possessed and they're trying to kill Rose and friends. They're in danger. The actual pit is opening and it seems as though in the editing that the beast is escaping. It says, and I am free. And the camera kind of comes up to the Doctor and Ida looking over like, ooh. And everyone, oh, and Zach is there like, oh, somebody report. So everyone's in danger. And I think that it's just a really, really great way of tying everyone together. It's some of the best the Doctor Who's ever been.
Yeah. And that's just a classic Monday for me. Oh,
there you go. I knew it. It's always like this with you, isn't it? Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of bloody action going on. The writing was phenomenal in this. I really, really enjoyed it. There's one last little thing. I mentioned it before, but I'll say it one more time. The set design was really great. With Doctor Who, you know, they need to find places they can save money. And basically we're using the same three bits of corridor over and over and over and over in this, and the same ventilation shafts over and over and over,
over but and over and over.
Didn't feel like they were doing it. It felt like plausibly like they were going through kind of 3, 4, 5 levels.
Well, it's like a flat pack, you know, pop-up base. Like, it story-wise makes sense that everything would look the same though you're so right,
which is quite pleasing. And the aesthetic of it as well, this kind of like yellow black rust noughties industrial aesthetic, it reminds me, now this is a niche reference, of a Lego PC game called Rock Raiders. And
oh, that's somewhere in the back of my memory.
This
I know
felt that. Very Rock Raiders to me, and so just felt very right, I think. Rock Raiders also was set, I think that had something to do with a wormhole as well, actually, in it. God, maybe this is a Rock Raiders story. That goes deep.
Maybe it is.
It's like how my theory that Eternals, Marvel Eternals, is actually just a retelling of Bionicle. We'll go into that another day.
That's another podcast.
That's another podcast.
Can I talk for a moment about my childhood and adult fear of Toby Zed?
Oh, go on. It's been coming.
I've got to talk about it. I won't say it too long, because I've talked it to death on the podcast, but Toby Zed was the reason why I turned this episode off. So I was watching it and I was like, oh, I saw the Ood, that's kind of funny. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, there's a scary voice, that's a bit creepy, whatever. It was something about the red contact lenses and the tattoos on the face, the really dark lips and the like beastly voice.
Yeah.
And it just scared the pants off me as a kid. And I've told this story before, but it was quite a while ago on Hulot, so I'll tell you again. I used to subscribe to the Doctor Adventures magazine. And after this episode aired and I was getting the magazine, because I think they started releasing the magazine just before A New Earth was released, so it was coming out at the same time parallel to series two. I used to make my mum go through the magazine every week, because I think it was weekly. And if there was ever a picture of Toby Zed, I used to call him the Red Eye Man. So me, like, if I say to my mum now, do you remember the Red Eye Man? She'd be like, absolutely. If I say Toby Zed, she'd be like, who the hell are you talking about? And she used to go through and either get a Sharpie and scribble it out, or get like packing tape, like brown packing tape, and stick it over every picture of him. And then she'd like come back to me with my magazine, she'd be like, okay, it's safe now. And I'm like, thank you, mom.
Such an act.
And I'd
that's
like go through
such
it.
An act of love from your mom, like that's such I know. That's actually the funniest, sweetest thing. Oh,
it was very sweet of her, but it really scared
there
me.
There was something, and it was so sudden when he would turn around and have the markings on him, because you would think it was just Toby, and then suddenly he had the markings in the eyes and he was a whole different character, and it was a jump scare. And it was the way he could turn at any time. It was instant.
The bit where he turns around and shushes the Ood, and he doesn't have the markings, he just has the red eyes. Because you at that point you think it's Toby, and he does that little shush and he's like, help me, oh my God, help me. And I'm like, oh no, it's not Toby, it's the beast.
Yeah. I just remembered another bit. When Toby first gets possessed in this, he's sitting and kind of reading all the ancient markings. And I guess that's how the beast's soul escapes, is in one of these things that they've kind of excavated. I don't know. I'm theorizing.
Yeah.
And he hears a voice in his room and it's like, Toby, Toby. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, who is that? Stop messing around. And then it's like, Toby. But then it becomes like, don't turn around. If you turn around, you'll die. And then he does ultimately turn around. And ultimately he does die.
Well, the voice is like, don't turn around. I'm reaching out for you, Toby. I can touch you. And it's so gross.
So scary. Now that is where I'm sure I would have had some nightmares about that. Also the Ood with the kind of like using their communicator balls as like electricity vaults they can just sort of jam into your head. That was really scary. Mm-hmm. See, now like I think about the upcoming series of Who and I look at the trailer and everything, and I don't see in those yet. Like, what it is that's gonna, you know, I see Jinx Monsoon and I'm like, camp, yes, whatever she did, I agree with her. And you know, the bogeyman and stuff. But I
the bogeyman looks scary, but I don't know that. I think Space Babies makes it silly enough that it won't be scary.
Yes. So I guess I'm just interested, like, where are those terrifying moments going to come in this time? You know, the really dark
things. I think
that's,
is it 79 yards? The, 73 the, like, the pub yards? One? 73, yeah, 73 yards. I think that's going to be, I don't think it's going to be scary necessarily. And I agree with you that I think it's difficult because they're 45 minute length and there's only 8 episodes. And I know that's because the quality of the production has gone up tenfold. But obviously at this year, we used to get 13 episodes of 45 minutes. So I think you had the room to play a bit with the content of the episode. So you would get really pushing the boat, experimental, risky stuff like this two-parter. Mm. And then directly afterwards, you get very risky in a different way, comedy insight on characters, the very Dr. Light episode, like Love and Monsters.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they have the wiggle room to have, for example, a Dr. Light episode or a controversial episode or a particularly scary episode. I think it all, my concern that I hope doesn't come true is that it might make everything a little bit on the same level of scary, on the same level of funny, on the same level of interest. Like, I hope that doesn't happen.
Yes. I guess I'm thinking, how dark will they go? But we'll find out, won't we? I'm jumping the
gun. Well, honey, we're going to find out this weekend.
Oh, quacker this week. Yeah. I don't think these first two will be especially... Well, that could be wrong.
I think they'll be jump scares and, like, body horror, like scary monster in that regard with the boogeyman from what we've seen so far. But then certainly not the Jinx Monsoon episode.
Well, I don't know, actually, because I thought I saw a clip and trailer of like a drum with a face coming out of it. Did you see that bit? Or someone's like clawing with a hand coming out of
the drum. Yes.
Maybe someone gets turned into a drum. It's not a good fate, is it? Anyway, yeah. I was thinking of the day, should we be doing star ratings? But no, we shouldn't, because we have a dreadful recency bias and quite the opposite of that. This one we saw when we were 9. So it's quite hard, really, to rank anything objectively. My letterbox is a mess.
Yeah, no, I kind of gave up on letterbox, to be honest, but I don't like star ratings because mine change a lot. And I have a friend that's doing a rewatch of Doctor Who at the moment, and they did a rewatch in like 2021, I think, and they did a 5-star rating for every episode. And they're now doing another rewatch and like changing it. They're like, oh my God, like it's changed so much, blah, blah, blah. And yeah. I just am like, yeah, and I'm sure it'll change again because, like you said, you have recency bias, you have nostalgia, some things age better, some things age worse. And I just kind of like to go off the, like, how I loved it as a kid and how I love it now. And for this episode, bloody terrified me as a kid, absolutely adore it now.
So smash is the rating. Smash.
Well,
beautiful.
Speaking of smash or pass, I've got another game for you.
What's that? What game? I don't know. Game. Do we do a game?
It is a game. Of camp or damp.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Yeah, baby!
Yeah!
So for anyone who hasn't listened to Hula before, we like to play a little game where we go through the episode we've watched and see if something is camp or if it is damp.
Oh.
Now, Alistair, the Doctor getting a mortgage, camp or damp?
You'll have to get a mortgage. Very camp.
You'll have to get a mortgage.
Very camp. Very camp. Yes.
Very camp.
Certified
camp. I like the, like, oh, I don't know, we could get one together. I don't know, maybe not. Who knows? Maybe not. We'll see. I was like, you're gonna screw.
I think we can say they hadn't done it at this point.
I don't think they'd done it at this point, but by the time the Runaway Bride came around, by the time Doomsday happened and Rose said she was pregnant, the Doctor was like, you're not. And she's like, nah.
It's
like,
somewhere after this
had.
One. It was the severity of this one. It happened right after this one. That's when they did it.
Well, I think they had the sillies at the beginning of Tooth and Claw, which I know a bit early.
What do you think?
But then also when they're holding hands walking down the street in Fear Her, like after the Gavitars, they're like holding hands, she's leaning on him, she's like, oh, this is great. Like, I don't know.
I think that's still early stages. I think maybe they'd had like a little kiss.
Maybe. They definitely did at some point. Protein one with just a dash of 3, camp or damp?
Oh, camp. All of it's camp. Yeah, especially like that. I like her trying to customize her slop.
I know. The thing that was definitely soy sauce. And finally, dinner lady ood, camp or damp?
C- camp, especially when it revealed the Satan worship tendencies.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, the beast and his armies arise in the pit and make war against God. What did you say? I said, I hope you enjoy your meal.
Enjoy your food. Hope you enjoy your meal. I'm going to start doing that. I might get a service job just to try that.
Just to say something absolutely off the wall, bat crazy. And it's like, what? And it's like, you've got your cutlery.
What? Brilliant. Brilliant.
Oh, well, off the back of that, I've got a couple of fun facts for you about these episodes.
Okay, go on. Tell me everything.
So Davies mentioned that in the writer's tale, there was an early draft of these episodes where the cliffhanger was that Rose becomes possessed by the beast. But this was discarded as Davies didn't like how this led to her being in a dream sequence subplot when possessed in the next episode.
Oh, what? So she would have like seen things while she was possessed.
Well, so we would have seen her amongst everyone and she would have been possessed. And I think it would have cut into her mind and she would have like been in a dream sequence, like her inside her own mind kind of thing. And I agree that that kind of takes out of the reality of the episode.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, all for the movie edition can bring it back in for the extended cut.
It really could. Well, something that they would put back in for the extended cut is that the only significant edit made in post-production was a sequence in which the Doctor uses the drill head to detect the sound of the heartbeat coming from the beneath the planet's surface.
Wow. So what, like he like just sticks kind of ear to floor, ear to drill.
Ear to drill and hears a heartbeat. Creepy.
That's freaky.
You're reading my fun facts before I read them to you.
I'm not.
Your little cursor has just clicked on the end of the planet.
Let me move the cursor.
Okay. Originally, instead of the Ood, the Slitheen were going to be in this episode, or more specifically, another family from the planet Rex called the Fabratory. So the same suits, but obviously that's the Slitheen family. With the idea being that they had become enslaved by humanity. The Rex Corrick Fabratorians secretly believed that the planet being explored was actually the dwelling place of their god who would free them from their servitude. But Russell became concerned that the return would kind of detract from the episode's human perspective. And also apparently they had to make big repairs to the old costume, so he was like, nah, not worth it, let's make something new.
Well, I'm really glad they didn't reuse, because that sounds 15 times less scary to have Slitheen with red eyes, I have to say. I guess like maybe it would have been like slightly different. Yeah, I mean, I do like the idea, however, that the Ooda may be conscious and actually are like, brilliant, let's free God. And that's why they're like,
maybe.
Yeah, like, let's go! Open the pit! Which I think is a really funny idea. However, I still prefer what we got.
No, I think what we got was good, especially because it then got later explored in further episodes. I think that was good.
Yes.
A couple more fun facts. Coincidentally, the Satan Pit was shown during the week of the 6th of June 2006, which is 666. It followed a wave of devil-related stories in the media, including the release of The Omen.
I wonder if that means anything about Doctor Who then, because we're going to have Doctor Who in that week again now. So let's see, how many episodes have we got? Episode 1, 2...
I've got a little calendar I've made. I haven't got the episode titles next to them, though.
Episodes... Oh, guess which episode it is.
It's not episode 6, is it?
It's episode 6.
Bloody Nora! Oh, God. We're in for it again. That's going to be the scary one.
Which one's episode 6? Do we know which one it is?
Is that one Rogue? I think episode 6 might be Rogue. Finally,
anyway.
When thinking about what should be at the bottom of the pit, a couple of things were considered other than the Beast by Russell T. Davies, including Davros and the Master.
Russell. I mean, I guess this wasn't like advanced considerations. I consider many stupid things in my day.
Well, also, you've got to remember that neither of these villains have come back yet. And I think it would have been a bit of a gag if, you know, the perfect trap to enslave the worst thing you could ever imagine. And it's Roger Delgado. There's something that would have been
That is quite funny. That is quite funny. Davros would have been ridiculous. I mean,
Davros would have
all this
stupid.
Brilliant mysticism and, you know, horror and supernatural abilities, and then it just being reduced down to just like a
It's the classic Davros as well, that talks like this, and when he gets angry, he talks like this. Like that, no.
Yeah, no. No, 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 exactly. No, I don't think. Oh, that heartbeat, Davros.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you so much, dear listener, for listening to this episode of Hoola. As always, we love to hear what you think, so please reach out to us on all of our socials. We're everywhere at Hoola Pod. That's X, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, all of which are at Hoola Pod. You can also rewatch old episodes of the podcast on our YouTube channel, which is at Hoola Pod.
You've learned that speech by heart, and I just don't have something similar in my head every week.
Every week
struggle.
You're like, what do I say?
What do we? Who are we?
Coffee.
What show is this? Rate the podcast 5 stars is the first instruction. It takes 2 seconds. Just do it. God. Next. Follow the podcast. Good. Follow the podcast. That's important as well. Then you get notifications. You've already been told to go to the socials, so don't worry about that. Donate to the coffee. That's optional, but really appreciative if you do. KO-FI on coffee. I think just coffee.whatever it is/hoolala. That's professional. And then what's the other thing? Oh, share with a friend. Put in your story. Engage with us on the socials. All really helpful. Gets us lots of impressions. We love hearing from you anyway. And yeah, that's it really, I think. We're working on something new and exciting.
Oh, yes.
Which is a website. Can you imagine that? Hoolala.co.uk is pending. Pending. So if it doesn't turn up, don't mention it again. But we're hoping it'll be full of mini games.
Lost media.
Flash games. There'll be a...
Destroy a Dalek.
Yeah, there'll be like help Sam escape the recording booth type thing. There'll be what are the
help
games?
Keep Alistair in the recording booth.
Help keep Alistair in the recording booth. Keep the door shut. Keep things he can fidget with away. Yeah. Keep him focused. Come here. Keep looking. Oh, he lost focus. You lose. He's lost his notes.
Game over.
There'll be exclusive wallpapers you can download. There'll be 1024x768. For your brand new not widescreen monitor. There'll be trailers for the next week and indeed a trailer maker where you can use an AI version of our voices to create the next time preview.
The legal team for Hoolala would like to say that none of the above will feature in the hoolala.co.uk website.
No, it won't be there. Yeah.
But we will, so we'll
but
see
we'll be there.
There,
we'll be there, we'll be there. Lovely pictures of us. Well, there will be, in a way, an extended gallery. Which should we make a gallery?
With a few pictures of us.
You could do it. It's a bit sad, isn't it? Wallpapers. No, let's not do that.
Who's going to have us as a wallpaper?
I don't know.
Everyone send us print screens of your Hoolala lock screens.
Yes. Send your own through to us.
Thank you. Well, after you've done that, we will thank you so much for listening. And we will see you next week where we'll be watching Space Babies.
Space Babies is next week. I can't wait. Yes, we'll see you there. If we're not watching with you in person, then we're very excited to share our feelings with you right afterwards. And of course, we'll be asking for your feeling right after the episode airs. Do head to @hoolalapod and share your reaction with us there.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you so much for listening. And we will see you next week.
See you next week, darling.
Bye.
Bye.